This is the Partnership Playbook, a podcast helping sales and marketing leaders secure high-value partnerships that finally unlock business growth and reclaim time. I'm your coach, Phil Hayes-Sinclair. Welcome to the show. So everyone, welcome to another episode of the Partnership Playbook. Today, I'm joined with Anna, and we are going to talk about a fascinating history from recruitment to community building and an impact that has happened at a grassroots level, which I think is just incredible. At the core of all of it, I think, at least Anna's about to correct me, I'm sure, was a range of partnerships that were able to be built over a pretty long period of time. So Anna, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with your background so we can set the context for everyone who's watching and listening. What was it about your professional start in life that made you ultimately move into grassroots community-driven work?
So I'll answer that. There's sort of two parts that spring to mind with this question. I got really into LinkedIn itself, and people often ask me why LinkedIn, why not other social media? Because I don't help anybody on any other social media, and I don't, you know, most people are a social media person. Mm-hmm. How are you just specialist LinkedIn? And the reason is I did start my career in the recruitment industry. I used to manage CRMs as part of my role, and I used to do training on CRMs. And then in 2009, this thing called LinkedIn came along with live data. And everyone was suddenly like, whoa. And that was a huge shift in that industry. So I got into LinkedIn at that phase, and I got really into the whole LinkedIn world. And LinkedIn Local came out of my passion for LinkedIn. The other thing, and it's actually the second part to my answer, is actually going even further back. And I need to actually give credit to a fellow community builder called Victoria Cumberbatch, who's in the US, who actually pointed this fact out to me, and I had never put two and two together, which is she talked about her history of being an only child and how that made her a really good community builder. And that's exactly the case for me. And I had never, until she said it, the penny had never dropped that that was why I was so into community and into relationship building, was because as a child, I didn't have any brothers and sisters. And so, and in this case for her as well, she talked about it, and I realized I was exactly the same. You are forced to go out and meet people, to build relationships, because you don't, you know, there's an element, I think, perhaps of loneliness that, I don't know, the loneliness is quite the right word for only children. I was happy being an only child. But that is essentially how the whole community side began.
I find communities fascinating for a range of reasons. You know, the alignment of people who find a point of belonging, the way in which people can communicate in their own way, because the community gives them that sense to be able to do that. When you started, or when I started, at least with LinkedIn, it was 2003 or four. And I remember just being so captivated by the idea that you can reach out to just about anyone provided they were on the platform. And this is well before we had Facebook and well before we had any kind of today's modern social medias. And it seemed to set the tone for quite a respectful kind of dialogue around, yes, it was your CV, but you could start to share things and updates, even to a point where I think you could log in the place you were traveling to, and people in your network were made aware that you were traveling to another city, and that way they were brought to you as opposed to you trying to work out who was there to go and meet with, which was amazing for business development and sales work. But when you think about where you really hit the button for LinkedIn Local, it seemed like it was the late teens, 22, late teens, and it came about through one post. So can you tell us about what that starting point was? Because it really did feel like it started a revolution around this idea of LinkedIn Local, LinkedIn Local, I should say.
Well, look, I think it did. It certainly started a movement. I was at that point, it was 2017, I was in Coffs Harbour, where I live now, actually where I grew up, although I had been living overseas in the UK, and that was where I got all my experience. And I came back to Australia. I had two small children. I was using LinkedIn to set up out on my own. to set up my own business. And because I had used it previously and I used to train recruiters on how to use sourcing things, LinkedIn was the very obvious place for me. So I started connecting with people, and I actually had the Sales Navigator trial, and Sales Navigator actually gives you stats on who's active on the platform. So you can do a search and it actually will tell you these are the top two, these are the 200 people that are actually active on LinkedIn this month out of 1600 people, or however that works, whatever the numbers are. And so there was so few, and I actually did a post about it, and one of my local connections said, oh, well, if there's so few, why don't we meet up? And I was like, oh, what a great idea. So I sat on it for a week, and I decided I'll just organize a coffee one morning and put up a post. And I putting a hashtag, the hashtag LinkedIn local on it. Hashtags were not a thing on LinkedIn then. I don't know why. I think I'd heard a LinkedIn podcast that was talking about how hashtags were a thing on Instagram but weren't on LinkedIn. So for some reason I decided to put a hashtag on that post. It may have been the single biggest career decision I ever made.
Wow.
But, yeah, so I said, you know, I'm going to host this. Does anybody want to come? Please let me know. I'll book a table. And that was it. It was the simplest post you can imagine. It did, however, capture, because I had been using LinkedIn a lot, it did, and back in 2017 there just wasn't the volume of content that there is now on LinkedIn. And it did go to people that I had recently connected with overseas. I mean, I was connecting very widely at that point. And it was picked up by Eric Eklund in Brussels and Alexandra Galvez in London, who were like, oh, that's a great idea, LinkedIn local. That sounds cool. I might organize one where I am. So we very quickly had two other cities, not Australian cities, global cities. And then about a week later there was Swish Goswami, who was actually in Toronto but traveling to New York, and thought he would start, he would create a meetup in New York when he got there as a way to meet people in a new city, which was a fabulous idea as well. So between the four of us with very global reach, we were each in different countries, in many cases different continents, and particularly the other three had very good reach. So it captured the right people, I think, at the right time. It was the right idea. There were so many things that fell into place. I think we'd all been on digital. You know, this is, you remember this very pre-pandemic. We'd all been on digital for 10 years. Social media was sort of 10 years in, and I think a lot of people have shifted to online, but yet there's still – it's still this enormous need to connect offline. And I think from a relationship perspective, people really recognize that. So it had the right people. And there's a really great, if anyone is interested in community building, there's a really great, it's a very short, it's only a couple of minutes long, TED talk by Derek Sivers on how to start a movement. And LinkedIn Local was the absolute demonstration of Derek Sivers's concept of how to start a movement, which is it's actually not the, it's whoever comes up with the idea isn't perhaps the greatest innovator, it's the second and the third and thereafter that are the innovators, because movements don't start with one person, they start with the subsequent followers. And I think ours was a LinkedIn Local was a very much a demonstration of that.
So from booking a table at a local cafe.
Well, 15 that came.
15 that came.
Yeah.
And I'm sure in the other centres, which were larger centres, it was larger and probably a little bit unexpected, the number of people that turned out for it. How did you go from that first occasion to understand the gravity of what you might have just started? Because, you know, pre-pandemic, there was a need for connection. Post-pandemic, an even bigger need for connection. What have you learned through that process, and what has been the, I guess, the connection points that you've been most surprised by through that journey?
Look, I think in those early first few months, I don't think any of us, of the four of us, really had any idea of what was going on. I think one thing we learned, it was May 2017, and particularly in the Northern Hemisphere, that's not an amazing time for events. September is really when things kick off in the Northern Hemisphere for that type of thing. And we saw that cycle happen because we had a whole host process of people wanting to start their communities for a long time. And that process repeated every year. You know, September was always when everyone was like, oh, right, now's the time to do this, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. And, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, I'd say it's sort of February, March. But it kicked off in September. And the other thing that happened was the release of LinkedIn Video. LinkedIn had no native video feature prior to September 2017. And I think the power of media was one of my biggest lessons. Swish had an event. He was in Shanghai. And held an event there, and that had about 100 people. That post alone got over 2 billion views. That was prior to the videos. And the minute the videos came out, it was when people were suddenly like, I need this in my city, or I need to do this. And the accessibility of video in terms of spreading an idea even just the imagery, people love to see it. And particularly events, I say constantly to people love events, images, whether you can do video or not, just share photos. And I think the power of that. The other thing, you know, to answer the question is the values. We were a very values-driven movement. We're very clear about the values from the outset, and that created the right environment for the building of this community and subsequently I've seen for many, many, many other communities since then.
We both love LinkedIn because of its ability to connect. I think the majority of the capital that I've had the chance to raise, the companies I've built, the partnerships that I've forged have largely all come from connections I've made on LinkedIn, at least that's where they've started. LinkedIn, I'm sure, has a number of strategic areas that they like to focus on. When you started with LinkedIn Local, what was LinkedIn's response to that? Because I'm sure they see glimpses of new use cases from time to time. But obviously when there was media being attracted to what was going on, it was around the world, it was sort of fitting into their global reach ambitions. And I don't think there's really a number two to LinkedIn. LinkedIn seems to be the king of the hill. How did they reach out or respond to that with you?
So there's a long story with this. And, of course, we were using the LinkedIn name and brand. Yeah. And I know a lot of people who understand legal trademarks will say, how on earth did you get away with that? So when we started, we were very much informal. This is, you know, these events are not for profit. If you want to organize one, keep it, you know, free or just covering costs. Don't seem to be making a huge profit with this because LinkedIn will step in. We tried to contact a few, both Alexandra and Swish had contacts at LinkedIn HQ themselves. They tried to contact LinkedIn's head office and get in touch to explain the kind of need and demand there was for something like this and really to get some clarification on. You know, there was a big thing about the use of the official LinkedIn logo. We were told not to use that quite early on through a group, I think, in North Carolina. Someone at LinkedIn had complained about it. So we took the logo off it and used our own logo, still using the name. But we really tried to work in partnership with LinkedIn from day one. Those efforts weren't very well founded in terms of we got crickets. No one was really listening. So we just continued in a manner that we felt they would allow us to continue, which was all keeping it very much grassroots, very much claiming not to be formally affiliated with LinkedIn or anything like that. And after about 12 months, so in 2018, finally somebody from the marketing department reached out and they loved it. Absolutely loved it. They could not have come up with better feedback on how they wanted to support the content that was coming out of these events. And they would have known, you know, we have stories, numerous stories of very big influencers on LinkedIn who actually started because somebody dragged them to a LinkedIn local event. They'd never even used the platform. They started using it from that day and they have over a million followers now. So they knew it was actually increasing platform usage. And suddenly it became relevant for people locally to use LinkedIn, which for a lot of people in, I think, a local business environment, it probably hasn't, and it's probably perhaps still isn't. And so they were very positive. But over the, we were in conversation with that team for probably nearly 9 months, had numerous calls with them. And over the course of a few months, the language changed and it became very legal. And I think someone at the legal department got a hold of it and just said, no way. So I think the marketing team found themselves in a slightly awkward situation on, because at this point it was in 96 countries and in over 1,000 cities. Like it was so big and none of us had anticipated. And honestly, it would have, I mean, that's enormous, but it would have doubled had they have let us continue doing what we were doing. But the outcome was they decided to issue some very generic terms, which are the terms that still actually exist to this day. And I mean, I continue to run LinkedIn local events in Coffs Harbour where I live, and many groups did continue. So they didn't shut it down. They just gave it some very generic rules, which essentially meant our role as mentors, as community managers, because we had a whole host community where everyone was collaborating, forming partnerships, sharing a lot of information. The terms very much meant that, and all of those values and that that internal host community couldn't exist anymore. And so I, as a kind of leader in that, stepped back. We all stepped away as, I guess, community managers. We still kind of call ourselves as creators or founders of the movement. But and I honestly think in terms of corporate, you know, I will say this very openly, in terms of supporting corporate grassroots movements, it was, I think, one of the worst examples of a response that a global corporation could have had to something that is actually impossible to create from an internal marketing perspective and an internal community perspective. It could only have done what it did because it was a user community and because it was grassroots. Now, I am fully aware of all the legal situations and everything that we stepped upon and, you know, couldn't have gone with, but I think there was a potential for an easier partnership that they could have supported and let things really run. But as history has it, you know, there's a pandemic 12 months after all of that happens and every opportunity to meet in person shuts down. So who knows what would have happened in hindsight.
It's funny, isn't it? I struggle to think why a movement like that that was driving so much natural consumption and growth, tapping into almost previously untapped segments of a user base, would not be thought of differently, particularly given how broad it was. I find that difficult.
It is. It's difficult. And I think there was certain, I think there was anger even from, I think, for example, the corporate team in India as to how it had been handled. And the German market were not happy about how it had been handled. It was a very generic response. But I think at the end of the day, it comes back to corporate strategy and the business model. I mean, the business model for LinkedIn is not events. They don't. There's a whole legal challenge in terms of organizing conferences and events with your official name on it. And I just think it was just not under their radar. That was very much how they thought it could continue. And it certainly has. I mean, there's people still starting events in, you know, actually somebody sent me a message this morning. It was in Sierra Leone. They wanted to start an event there. You know, it's still continuing to grow, but there's no collaboration. There's no way of even knowing that there's actually one in a city already. Like it's impossible to, you know if there was one even, if you wanted to start one, there's actually no way of even looking up. There's no host register. There's nothing for anyone to understand. Or traveling, if you're traveling to a new city and you want to actually go to a LinkedIn local event, which was so common, we were hearing that all the time. You know, there's no way of even finding those events unless you happen to search on a hashtag or stumble upon an event. And even, it's assuming somebody's even using a hashtag, which perhaps probably isn't really the case anymore. So,
you know, it's interesting, and I'd love to just get your thoughts on building on why or how would you think about, if you had your time over again, if you were that second or third or fourth person who saw the movement being built on a native platform, just like what you've described, how would you think about engaging with the platform differently if you had your time over again, knowing that the sort of semi-accidental adding of a hashtag was actually the germ that made all of this germinate into something pretty magical? How would you think about that and maybe the advice you would give to people that maybe are not trying to do something similar to that, but are going, look, I see a very natural fit for me to maybe increase the consumption of a not yet partner organization. Let's use LinkedIn as the example, driving more use. What would your advice be to them around trying to bring a new opportunity like that to them?
I think it's a difficult question. I think it's really, if I saw that, I would, whether it's LinkedIn or not, I would be careful of trademarks. I mean, I think it's hard. It's a different question to, if I had my time over again, what would I do differently? Because the answer to that is nothing. We really tried to get in touch with LinkedIn's head office and we couldn't. And no one saw what was coming. But, you know, to see it again and to understand and reframe and or to frame something new that's happening. I think you've got to be careful of, you know, the legalities of using names that you don't own that could be potentially seen as damaging or in some way. You know, having said that, you know, Twitter when it was called Twitter, X when it was called Twitter. I mean, they used to have meetups all over the world that was user organized. You know, it's a very grassroots thing. And it's the case of, you know, part of my business is providing LinkedIn training, and I will organize a LinkedIn workshop and I will call it a LinkedIn workshop. There's no difference to call it doing a LinkedIn local. I'm not formally endorsed by LinkedIn. There's no way. So plenty of it happens, but I think to see something and start it, I would just be careful around the ownership of what you're doing, and also ensure that you also own the work that you're doing, if that makes sense.
No, I do get that. When you think about the evolving landscape for networking and what is happening now in the world, LinkedIn obviously has a massive role to play. It continues to. And there are other ways to do that. How do you see partnerships being built off the kind of that networking? Because, you know, for the most part, people will observe and consume, but they won't actually make that step to forge a new relationship with a view to try and creating a partnership. What do you see the future of that kind of work to be, given your experience?
Look, I think that it can actually depend on the definition of partnership, in that some people see it as a very formal thing and some people see it as a very informal thing. I personally see partnerships as quite informal. It depends what you're doing. I mean, if you're starting a business with someone, then obviously it does need to have a formality. But if you're collaborating on, I don't know, running a single workshop together, to me that's much more informal. So I think it can depend on that. But I do see partnerships as a huge part of the way we network and the way we do business. And I think really because I think we're facing some pretty kind of serious challenges as a human race and as a species. And there's a lot at stake with, I think, online platforms influencing that. I think online, I could go on about this and I won't, but I mean, I very much have a theory that the way we actually network as human beings now is very much influenced by online platforms and online behavior. And I think there's something very wrong about that, because as a species, we have been building relationships for thousands and thousands of years, and yet the word networking didn't exist until 1967. So yes, a lot of the rhetoric around how we network now is very much influenced by online networking. It bleeds into offline networking. It's also very influenced by sort of early 20th century management culture. So, which is why I think a lot of people don't love the word networking. But networking ultimately leads to partnerships. And I think partnerships are the future. A lot of my work is around reframing the whole idea of networking. And I think it's essential. Yeah. It's an absolutely essential skill, particularly in a world of AI, and particularly with the influence that we receive from platforms. So be that both positive and negative. So, I think the future for partnerships is huge and may well actually be the one thing we will have left.
It's funny. I think you and I are singing from exactly the same song sheet. I look at all of the different ways that people think about networking and growth and progress. And I think what people are missing across the board, likely because we spend too much time in our own minds, is that probably over 98% of what we do every single day is a function of partnership. And I just don't think people are quite clocking what's right in front of them. So I think you're right. We are facing so many different issues on so many different fronts. And I can never find a way to move away from the idea that we're not better together. Mm. It just seems to be a natural pairing. The question is, how do you find the pairing and how do you make it ideal to make an outcome which is going to be win-win? So, Anna, I know that we're on a timeline today, so I want to jump to one or two more questions before you go, but I would love to continue this conversation because there is something quite remarkable about what you created with LinkedIn Local. Tell me briefly about a partnership that you've looked over or been part of, which you thought was a really great example of a fantastic partnership. I'd love to sort of break that down a little bit to understand through Anna's lens what you think makes a great partnership, and using a definition of, you know, we're coming together to create something which is something we couldn't do by ourselves. Is there an example in your history where you just marveled at a relationship or partnership that turned into something pretty spectacular?
Look, I think I'll go back to the LinkedIn Local scenario, but I could use everyday ones in terms of me co-running workshops with people and the value in terms of what people get out of it, which is two different perspectives. What you get out of it is a sense of legitimacy of the work you do, as well as that type of thing. But I will actually, to answer the question, I will use an example of a single person who wanted to host a LinkedIn Local. And then there are numerous cities who have absolutely run with the idea. One of them is Baltimore in the US. There are groups that have thrived forever. But in terms of what I really witnessed with LinkedIn Local was we had a system and a process and a mentoring process that supported people enough to give them the courage and the skills, or probably the courage and the process perhaps, to build something that was helpful to their career. So I saw so many people come into the LinkedIn Local scenario. They were new to business or new to an area. They needed some kind of process to follow or system to follow, or even an idea just to help them establish. And I have seen people just simply thrive with the 45-minute mentoring call that they had with 10 other people. Like, that was it.
Yep.
And it was just something that had just and the value that has created in, like, a city like Baltimore, who I know in their first 2 years raised like $30,000 for living classrooms, and the impact that has on and that process has been repeated time and time again. But I think it's a case of, I guess, the partnership with that host. And again, this was a very informal partnership. There's no legal contracts happening or anything like that. It was literally just, I want to do this in my city. Can you help me? Yes, here's our host manifest. Here are our values. This is what we know works. What help do you need? What support do you need? How can we support you on the platform to help you promote your events? And that was simply it. And what people got out of that in terms of hosting events, what people got out of that in terms of going to events, and the lasting impact that has created I think is just a really fine example of what partnership is and should be. It's, you know, it was so beneficial to the person who's seeking the support and the help.
I totally get that. I have a dozen other questions to ask you, and I know we're going to run short of time.
I have a bit more time. If
you're okay?
I've got 10 minutes or so.
Oh, no worries. When you do the work that you do in helping people upskill on LinkedIn and understand what they can be using it for and how they can become more powerful in their community, what are you looking to try and achieve with people that have no idea about LinkedIn? It sounds strange to ask this question because LinkedIn was around since 2001 and now here we are in 2025. Are you finding people that are still not quite familiar with what the power
Absolutely.
Of this platform is?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's like a daily conversation for me. Mm. I think one thing I really try and help people understand is LinkedIn is there to support you throughout your entire career, and the way that you use it actually doesn't change. So we've seen a lot of very, I guess, spammy, salesy behavior on LinkedIn. We see it in the sort of volume of automated DMs all the time. And that is a surefire way to alienate somebody who actually could in 2 years' time be a potential employer because you're in a different situation.
Yep.
Where, you know, and somebody goes back through their messages and realizes it's just a bit out of character. So for me, one thing I am always really try and get people clear on is the thing that changes on LinkedIn is your profile, how your profile is set up, you know, because this week you might be starting a new business or 10 years in business, who knows, but you're actively using the platform for business development. You have no idea in 2 years' time you may be seeking employment. And that, and I think with the massively changing shift of how we work and even how we live with, you know, the threat and opportunity of AI and things like that, none of us know really what's coming for the next 2, 5, 10 years of our careers. And I think when people understand LinkedIn properly, one thing I try and get them to understand is how you use the platform, how you connect with people, how you interact with people, that does not change. What changes is the profile and the background of your profile and what, not just the background image, I mean, but just the what's written on your profile. All of that should change based on the stage you're at in your career. What shouldn't change is the relationships that you build, is how you connect and how you communicate.
I remember hearing Reid Hoffman in the very early days talking about how relationships matter and how that was the byline for LinkedIn for many years and how that seems to have... It perseveres kind of, but it's not one of those things which is sort of on their masthead anymore. It's not something that you would find as a call to action. And I think you're 100% right. The idea of there being relationships that you start 20 years ago and then still persevere with, and they have that, your professional reputation almost now is single-handedly managed via LinkedIn for a lot of us. And I think when you look back on all the different phases, you know, through 8 companies I've been part of, there were very different phases through that. But I'm hoping that the tone has remained, you know, the tone and the respect and the approach has remained reasonably consistent across time, because everything is now online. So we can go back and take a look at what was happening 5 years ago. Anna, where can people go and find more about you and the work that you do so we can drive people to your expertise?
So my LinkedIn profile is Anna McAfee, obviously, on LinkedIn. I think it might be the only one, maybe another one. I don't know. Anyway, it'll be the one that comes up top because my profile is so well optimized. Yeah. My website is annamcafee.com. Both of those places, but LinkedIn is where I hang out. So first and foremost, I have an open profile. You can send me a message and that should detail most of my work on that profile.
Awesome. Well, given time is of the essence today, and I want to thank you for spending time explaining more about LinkedIn Local. I hope people take inspiration from how something so seemingly small can have such a gigantic impact, and that lesson around how there are multiple people that come after the first idea generator of a community is actually very, very important. History will repeat itself, and there will be others that want to try and do those kind of very local events, it will happen again, I'm sure. And I'm hoping that LinkedIn takes a different view of that in the future, because they've got all the upside to gain. And I share with you the frustration around how they ended up managing that. I think they could have done a much better job.
Yes. Well, I think I was pretty burnt out at that point. I was just ready to just put my hands up and go, I don't know what to do with all this demand. If you guys can't support it, then I can't either.
So. No, that's it. You did an amazing job. Anna, let me close out with some rapid fire questions that we ask every guest that comes on the show, because I'm curious to hear your answers to these ones. So are you ready to go?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go. Question number one, complete this sentence. Partnership is?
The future of the way we do business.
You should trademark
probably that, the way we live, actually, maybe.
Yes. You should trademark both. That was an excellent answer. Question two, what content are you loving at the moment? And it can be anything.
I honestly, podcasts. I am a big podcast listener. I love the medium of podcast. I think it's extremely intimate. It's extremely wide-ranging. And it's a medium that I think it's got a lot of legs still to grow.
Have you got any tips?
Not really. I don't. I'm much more a consumer of podcasts than I am of actually creating them. I have hosted a podcast in the past, which it wasn't my podcast. I hosted a podcast on mental health in the workplace, which I worked with a production studio, which was actually bushfire funding here in Australia through Sarah. And it was such a great experience. I would love to do it again. I can't find the time. But I also, it's a bit one of those things, if you write a lot, sorry, this isn't a rapid fire answer. If you read a lot, writing is really hard. And I think it's the same with podcasting. If you consume a lot, you stop consuming because it becomes a work in terms of creation. So I don't know that I have any tips for podcasting. I just like to listen to them.
Awesome. What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
That every relationship needs to be leveraged.
Oh, good one.
It doesn't.
It does not. Correct. Oh, that's one of the best responses I've had to that question. When you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
I think trust is really important. And how you gauge trust, I think, is a gut feeling. But, you know, if you're unsure, there's LinkedIn recommendations, Google reviews, that type of thing. You can go and research. But I think trust is core.
It is. It always is. Hard to win, easy to lose. Final question. What's the one thing you're deeply grateful for right now?
Honestly, living in Australia.
Hear, hear. Indeed. Yes, I think.
I think, that's all I'll say on that. But I'm deeply grateful for not living in another country right now.
Agreed. Anna, thank you so much for the time. We're going to link to your website, your LinkedIn profile in the show notes. And for anyone who is listening or watching this right now, do take time to go and look up the LinkedIn local story and connect with Anna, because you won't regret it. Anna, thank you again. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Phil. Appreciate it.
Before you go, I have a quick question for you. Do you worry that you're wasting time, money, and credibility with the wrong partnerships? It's exhausting to pretend everything's fine while secretly worrying that you've made the wrong call. You see others thriving with the right connections, and you're stuck wondering if you're missing out on opportunities that could really elevate your business. Well, the good news is that ends today, because you can download my free partner calculator that instantly assesses if a partner is an ideal fit for your business. It'll give you the clarity and the confidence and the edge you've been looking for to secure high-value partnerships that not only finally unlock business growth, but also help you reclaim your time. The link is in the show notes. And I'm really glad you're here. I'm Coach Phil Hayes Sinclair. I'll see you in the next episode.